Hello and welcome to the Icebreaker Podcast, a brand new podcast starting today on February 26th. It is NHL trade deadline day. My name is Spencer. With me is my podcasting partner, Matt. We are doing this podcast in partnership with the Icebreaker app, which Matt actually got to develop. So Matt, would you like to speak about a little bit about the app there?
Yeah, so Icebreaker is an application that will watch Twitter for NHL insiders such as Bob McKenzie or Pierre LeBrun. There's a couple of them there, and it will notify you if there's an NHL trade or a rumor or contract extension. There's a couple of categories, and that's been really useful for days like today where it's trade deadline. And me and Spencer have always wanted to talk about hockey, so we figured why not just put them together and see where it goes.
Yeah, Matt and I have pretty much talked hockey every day, so it made sense for us to do it in podcast form. Matt, did you say there was somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 people on Icebreaker app today?
Yeah, today there were about 8,000 people that are receiving notifications, which is by far the most that it's ever had at one point in time. It's funny, it tends to spike up to around the trade deadline and the NHL draft, and it kind of goes down for a little bit. And each time it spikes, it gets even higher. And most of the users are from the Reddit hockey community, which is pretty great. So it'll probably dip off a little bit here, and then around the draft, it might go up even higher, which is pretty exciting. So,
good times. That's great. Great. Yeah. Hockey fans are definitely desperate for desperate for news.
Yeah.
We're going to jump in today to the trades that happened today. There were 16 deadline day deals from what we can understand. There's obviously still a couple that are maybe poking around out there. Not too far off. Last year in 2017, there were 18, 19 the year before, 24 the year before that. So we're not too far off. We're going to jump back a little bit farther, just to a week ago. The first trade we're going to talk about is actually Peter Mrazek. So he went from the Red Wings to the Philadelphia Flyers for a conditional fourth round pick in this year's draft and a conditional third round pick in next year's draft. That fourth can turn into a third if Mrazek wins three games and Philly makes the playoffs, and can be a second as well if he wins, I believe, five games and they make the Eastern Conference Final. So far, Mrazek has actually won two games for the Flyers, so there is a chance that Detroit will end up with a third this year. The conditional third next year is if Mrazek re-signs in Philadelphia. Matt, what are your thoughts on this trade already?
I get why Philly had to make it. Of course, Elliott and Neuwirth are both gone for a couple more weeks, and they need a goalie. Alex Lyon looked pretty good from what I saw, but still pretty risky going on with him. So I'm pretty weary of getting goalies at the trade deadline. If I were a GM, that'd probably be the move I would hate having to make, just because goalies is just, you never know what they have to go through, what adjustments they need to make, the goalie coach, the new teams, communication, that kind of stuff. So my initial reaction was, I don't think this works out for Philly, but I get why they had to make it.
Definitely. And it's hard to imagine Mrazek going anywhere for anything more than a conditional fourth and a conditional third. I mean, he's a $4 million goalie who's technically an RFA at the end of the year. Detroit made it well known by leaving him open at the expansion draft last year to Vegas that they probably weren't going to qualify him for $4 million. And so as part of the deal, they actually retained $2 million of his salary. So Philly actually gets a questionable goalie as far as consistency goes, but they're only paying him $2 million to do that. And they need him over the stretch towards the playoffs while Elliott and Neuwirth get healthy. And it's hard to imagine him going for anything more than just that. Next up, we have just the next day, Nick Holden from the New York Rangers to the Boston Bruins for prospect Rob O'Gara and a third round pick in this year's draft. Just checking the lines for the Bruins, actually, Holden wasn't in the lineup in their most recent game. So there's something going on there, obviously. But again, Boston making a big push to make the Eastern Conference a bit more difficult for everyone else.
Yeah, I kind of saw this as that Boston was out on McDonough, was that their price was too high, and they said, okay, we'll take Nick Holden. I always thought Nick Holden was okay, but I follow at least one Ranger fan on Twitter, and he just hates him. So I don't really know what that means, if that's just being a polarized fan or if he's actually going to be decent. I think he's going to be decent, and I think a third-round pick, that ended up being the going rate for rental defensemen this trade deadline, and I think that's pretty fair for someone who missed out on McDonough.
Yeah, it's hard to say that a Stanley Cup contender can have too many defensemen. Nick Holden is definitely a serviceable defenseman in the NHL, and so if he slots in even behind a guy like Torrey Krugier, Adam McQuaid on the third pairing, playing with Kevin Miller, that's some okay ice time for a guy like Nick Holden. And again, once the playoffs come, you never know who's going to get hurt. And to have a serviceable NHL defenseman on your back end is going to be actually quite helpful, regardless of how deep you go.
Yeah, I think ideally you'd have 8 NHL defensemen going into the trade or the playoffs, and you have a couple of guys in the minors who can step up to play the 6th or 7th position when injuries hit, because they will hit you. And being a Canucks fan in 2011, I think we used 11 or 12 defensemen in their run to the final, which is just ridiculous. So that can happen, and you need guys like Nick Holden to get through that.
That's right, yeah. So we'll skip over some of the trades that happened. Eric Fair to the Sharks for a 7th-round pick. Anyone who gets traded for a 7th-round pick, no offense to the player, probably isn't worth speaking about for too long. But the Capitals pick up Jacob Jerebic from Montreal for a 5th, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's actually, again, a Stanley Cup hopeful team picking up a depth defenseman.
Yeah, Jacob Jerebic. A lot of the Habs fans seem to like him, and I think they weren't too happy about losing him. But as far as I understand, he's an unrestricted free agent. And I think this was one of those deals where it was like, we want you back in the summer. We'll trade you away for now and get something for you. So I know Habs fans weren't too happy about that, but if he comes back, then it's a win-win.
Yeah, he is technically a rookie, even though he's 26. He came over from the Czech Republic in May of last year. So he will be a UFA come July 1st. And just as other teams have talked about, like you mentioned, Matt, there is a possibility that he actually goes back to the team that he was traded from, which is incredibly possible and actually quite helpful for that team.
Yeah, there were a few of those trades today in this past week at a deadline where it was just this kind of handshake that we'll talk again July 1st, and hopefully you come back.
That's right, yeah. It's not collusion if you talk about it before the trade, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. The Los Angeles Kings trading for Tobias Reeder and Scott Wedgwood, who they promptly put on waivers, for Darcy Kemper. Does this have any feeling of the Marian Gaborik trade that when they acquired Marian Gaborik a few years ago?
I guess. I don't get it from a goalie perspective. They get rid of Kemper, who's been doing really good for them, and they put the acquiring goalie Wedgwood on waivers and call up Campbell and just assume that Campbell's going to kind of hold the backup position with no issue. So I don't really get that. But Tobias Reeder, obviously I think they traded Gaborik by this point for Phaneuf, and they need to fill that scoring winger role, especially because Gaborik had been injured half the time. So half the games they played, they didn't even have Gaborik. So Reeder will fill that void. And LA made a few interesting moves that kind of show shades of when they won the cup when they got Gaborik.
Yeah, that's true. And so he's already slotted on the third line, playing wing with Adrian Kempe and Nate Thompson. So not a terribly scary line, but granted, I mean, the Kings have Alex Ifalo on their first line, which is not exactly a household name. Reeder does have a goal in 2 games, and so he's already showing a little bit of promise there. He's a guy, again, that it's hard to know whether he's going to be very impactful. He's 25 years old. He's kind of past that prospect age, but there is a chance that he can, you know, do a little bit of damage for the Kings down the stretch.
Yeah, I think LA is relying more on those young guys to step up. Alex Iafallo, I think he's been, I don't know his point totals, but I've heard good things about him. I think he's been a good surprise for them, along with Kempe and Reeder. I think he fits in right with that group, so hoping for big things there. You need young guys in the playoffs. And Reeder seems like a good bet. Canucks are apparently interested in Reeder. I didn't really think that would be something that should work for him, because they've got enough of guys like that. But LA, I guess, didn't and saw use in him. But for the goalie side of things, I don't get it.
Yeah, the goalie swap is definitely questionable. Scott Wedgwood was not great in Arizona. I guess the hope was, or the thought process was, they didn't want to re-sign Kemper in LA, and so they wanted to bring Jack Campbell up. But again, if that's maybe the only way it makes sense, is if that's the only thing the trade was hinging on, because otherwise I would keep Kemper for the playoff run.
Yeah, and what did Kemper re-sign for in Arizona? Like $2 million?
It was very 2 years. It was very cheap, yeah. And so it's hard to believe that that the Kings wouldn't be able to make that happen.
Yeah, like, is Reeder that necessary that you give up that stability in net? Because Kemper played 19 games in the Kings and had a .932 save percentage and 2.1 goals against. Like, I don't know, that's risky.
That is, it's very, very risky. Yeah, it's true. We have a couple days later, again, Florida Panthers getting Frank Vetrano from the Boston Bruins for a 3rd-round pick. Again, fairly minor deal in some respects, but it's interesting to see that Boston was actually shipping out players because they were seen as a team that was going to be a buyer, and obviously they were later on. What do you think of Frank Vatrano and what he brings?
He seems like one of those guys that was just pushed down the lineup in Boston and couldn't really make his stay. He was pretty hyped up, as most prospects are by their own fans, but he's kind of one of those guys that scored prolifically in the AHL, if I remember. 2015, 2016, he had 36 goals in 36 games for 55 points, which is like pretty good. And then he followed up with 11 points in 39 games with Boston that same year. So he kind of bounced around, and I guess this was just I think they brought in like, how many rookies has Boston brought in this year? Like 10?
A very significant amount, yeah.
So he's just one of those guys that just couldn't make that cut. And this year he had 2 goals, 2 points in 25 games. So he was pushed down, was just kind of need a change of scenery. And I think a third-round pick is a good gamble for that. It kind of reminds me of when Jim Benning got hired at Vancouver. He traded second-round pick for Lyndon Vay. Kind of silver story. Scored a lot in AHL, but didn't really do much in NHL when it was all said and done. So it reminds me a little bit of that. I'll be curious to see if that works out for Florida.
Lyndon Vay, a Olympic bronze medalist now.
Yes, indeed.
So Vatrano hasn't played a game for Florida yet. It doesn't even seem as though he's played in the AHL yet, according to the stats that we have. So it'll be interesting. You're right. It'll be interesting to see what the hype around Vatrano was. If Florida thinks he's kind of a reclamation project, maybe they can make it work. That'll be interesting to see where that goes. Later that same day, the Devils made a big move, picking up Michael Grabner from the Rangers. They gave up a prospect named Igor Rykov and a second-round pick in this year's draft, which kind of set the price for the rest of the rentals that went on up until today.
Yeah, that seemed a second and a pick, or a conditional first even and a pick seemed, or sorry, a second-round pick and a prospect, or a conditional pick and a prospect seemed to be the going rate for most of these rentals.
Yeah, and
so
go ahead.
My initial reaction was, that's a lot to pay for Michael Grabner, but we talked a little bit on the day of, and you said he's got like 50 goals over the last two seasons, and so you kind of have to pay that price for him. And he's fast. He puts the puck in on the dirty goals. So the concern is, obviously, and when he's with the Islanders, he kind of faded out there. Went to the Leafs on a terrible Leafs team, mind you, and was just like, I don't know how many breakaways he had. He scored on one of them with his butt or something like
that's
that.
Right.
So it was... I don't know. I'm weary that he turns into the Leafs Grabner once he goes to the Devils, but if they probably know enough what works with them to try him out with the Devils and have him see success there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he is playing third line. He's got a great centerman in Travis Ajak. So there is some hope there that maybe he has someone to feed him the puck. You're right. His speed is his number one weapon. And yeah, I guess the idea of, you know, of him putting up 18 game or 18 points in 80 games with the Leafs a couple years ago is still a bit haunting. But yeah, 52 goals over the last two seasons. Now, he has actually never played 82 games in a season. The most he's ever played was actually 80 with the Leafs that year, and had 76 last year. So he is a little bit injury prone. He's a little bit older. He is 30 years old. So he's, you know, not necessarily past his prime, but I wouldn't say he's, you know, expected to put up 27 goals every year. He likely will get there this year with 25 already with the Rangers. One game with the Devils so far. We'll see where he goes moving forward.
Yeah, and I think the Devils, they don't have Marcus Johansson yet, do they? I think he's been out with a concussion for a while now.
Yeah.
Which is not his first concussion.
Yeah, that seems right.
So I kind of wonder if that might be, I don't know who they filled Johansson's spot since he got injured, which has been a while now, but I kind of wonder if Johansson was healthy, do they still make that deal? I'm not too sure.
Right, yeah. Grabner is definitely insurance. I mean, if it's just insurance, that's maybe a high price to pay, but you're right. I mean, he can slide down if he needs to. Stefan Nosen maybe can sit out while Johansson comes back, but the first line of Taylor Hall, Nico Hischier, Kyle Palmieri is pretty set. I imagine that Miles Wood, Pavel Zacha, and Jesper Bratt are going to play a lot together as well. So it's hard to imagine Johansson slipping in either of those places, but he could play with Grabner, and then maybe there's two trades that are working out playing together for the Devils. The next day, the Penguins made a massive deal, a very confusing deal for a lot of people for a really long time. We'll try and break this down as best we can. So the Penguins got Derek Brassard, Vince Dunn, Tobias Lindberg, a third-round pick from Ottawa this year. Ottawa got Ian Cole, Philip Gustafson, a 2018 first-round pick, and a 2019 third from Pittsburgh. And the Vegas Golden Knights were a part of this, and they got Ryan Reeves and a fourth-round pick from Pittsburgh, which is actually Vancouver's pick from this year. How confusing was this trade as it broke down?
Confusing enough to take 5 hours to get going, I think. I think the trade broke out at like 3 p.m. my time, and by the time it was announced and processed, it was like 8 or 9 o'clock, which is, and it got rejected like, what, 5 or 6 times, someone was saying. So it's just, it's hilarious. It's even more funny that Vegas is involved for what they got and what they had to do. And the rumors of them stepping in so that Broussard wouldn't go to Winnipeg is also part of the equation, which, who knows if that's true, but that's hilarious if so. Because Winnipeg got burned on a couple of trades where they're interested in someone and then it got sent to somewhere else. So it was kind of started that, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, initially the price that Vegas paid in order to the idea that they would retain $2 million of Broussard's salary, you thought they would get a little bit more than Ryan Reeves in a fourth. But it also kind of shows that the Golden Knights are in for the playoffs. And so they wanted some grit in Ryan Reeves, and maybe the fourth round pick's just a bonus.
Yeah, it was weird. You would think that he'd get at least a third round pick for retaining 40%, which is $2 million of Broussard, who has this year and the year after at least, I think.
That's right, yeah.
I think you'd get one of those third round picks. But if this meant that you got Ryan Reeves, who's good for playoffs, you get a pick out of it, and Winnipeg doesn't get Broussard, I feel like you just do that because why not? You got the cap space. You get a pick out of it. Ryan Reeves brings some veteran leadership. And I'm surprised Pittsburgh gave him away because they traded down in the draft to get him specifically.
That's right. They paid a high price for Ryan Reeves, yeah.
Yes, it was, I think, their first-round pick for Reeves in the second.
Yep. That
pick ended up being Klim Kostin, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so it was Ryan Reeves and a second to Pittsburgh for Oscar Sundquist and a first. Yeah, which was Klim Kostin. You're right.
Yeah. But so it's just odd that they had to move him to make it work, but it's just odd that he didn't even make it a playoff round with him because Rutherford wouldn't stop talking about how much they needed him when they got him. So that was surprising. I mean, that speaks to how much Vegas wanted.
That's right. And I guess in this case, Rutherford's search for a center just became more of a priority than Ryan Reeves.
Oh yeah. 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 Much easier, I guess, to get a winger in the off season than it is a center right now when Broussard's available. You don't get anyone better than Broussard for a while.
That's right. Yeah.
So you figure out a Ryan Reeves replacement later. So good deal for the Penguins. From Ottawa's standpoint, it's a good return. They end up flipping Ian Cole for another third-round pick. So they got Gustafson, two-thirds, and a first out of it, which is not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And I guess the scary part for Pittsburgh is, I mean, they're going all in for cups every year. There's no question about that. But they don't have a first this year. They don't have their own third, but they do have Ottawa's third, which would likely be high. They don't have a fourth, and actually next year they don't have a third or their own fourth. They have Minnesota's fourth. They don't have a sixth that year. Don't have a second in 2020. So not that the future is grim for the Penguins, but they're trying to squeeze every little ounce of Sidney Crosby that they can.
And they're able to. They're able to bring in – they can trade those picks for the big guys that are hard to get, and they can bring guys like Connor Sherry and Jake Gensel and Tom Kuhnhackl, Brian Rust, all these depth guys that – you put him with Crosby for a little bit. If that doesn't work, you put him with Malkin. If that doesn't work, now you put him with Broussard.
That's right.
It's just they got a good system, a good oiled machine going there. And so you can give up these picks if it means getting guys like Broussard in return.
That's very true. And, I'm staring at their cap-friendly site now. I still don't understand how they can fit Malkin at 9.5, Crosby at 8.7, Kessel at 6.8, Hornquist at 4.2, Hagelin at 4, Broussard at 3, and Letang at 7.5, and Schultz at 5.5. It's crazy that they can have all of these guys making such high salaries and somehow can still come in under the cap.
Yeah, and last year they had Fleury at $6 million, so they got $6 million out of this Vegas deal, and maybe there is some IOUs from that with this trade as well. Some people suspect that because Vegas got a second round pick to take Fleury in the expansion draft, which I thought that was just make sure it gets done because this whole Fleury situation needs to be resolved no matter what. But maybe there is a little bit of future considerations if you want to call
right.
that you'll help out Pittsburgh. Down the line when it gets to something like this that takes so much complexity to figure out.
That's right, yeah. So if you look at the two together, you'd have the Knights getting Marc-Andre Fleury, Ryan Reeves, and a fourth for retaining Broussard's salary, which isn't so bad.
Yeah. It's amazing how much stuff Vegas has turned into assets, especially throughout this trade deadline too.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
from the expansion.
Yeah,
draft.
They are a team that is going to be good for a long time, and obviously way better than anyone expected them to be at this point anyway.
Yeah, next year will be super interesting to see what happens, because this year was like no expectations. You probably won't make the playoffs, but just be a good expansion team, be a good story. You got a good goalie behind you, and then you lose three of your four goalies to start the year, and you have Legacy and Dansk alternating.
That's right.
And it's too bad for a little bit, which is just like, you can't make that story up. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And they even brought up that goalie from the WHL, whose name is escaping me now. But Dylan Ferguson. That's right. Yeah, he did play some games for Vegas as well, which is unbelievable. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, Vegas's outlook next year, I mean, James Neal's a UFA at $5 million. He's got to command at least $7 million, I would imagine. They'll lose Mikhail Grabowski, which is good for them. David Perron's up at 3.75. Ryan Reeves is UFA. William Karlsson is an RFA, only making $1 million this year. You got to expect that's going to go a lot higher as well. William Carrier is an RFA. Thomas Nozick, RFA. They like those guys. Lucas Sabiza is our highest paid defenseman, believe it or not, at 3.6 UFA.
Lucas Pizza.
That's right. Yeah. Clayton Stoner at 3.2 is a UFA. Colin Miller, million RFA. Philip Holm, who they just received today, is actually an RFA next year. Shea Theodore is an RFA. He'll get a nice hefty increase in salary. So there is actually some interesting salary cap decisions to be made next year for the Golden Knights. And granted, they've got the space for it. They definitely have the cap space for it. So they will. Sorry, go ahead.
It'd be really interesting to see what Perron and Neal specifically get in raises, and Karlsson, because those are, I think, I don't know Perron's point totals off the top of my head, but they want to keep him, and he's been part of their top line with, I think, Barchessault and Smith, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, believe it or not, actually, David Perron is over a point per game, so he has 57 points in 55 games. Yeah, so already this is tied a career high for him, and he's only played 55 games, so...
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So that might strap them a little bit more. But yeah, they've got guys like, I mean, Grabowski's been on IR, same with Clarkson, but Grabowski will be up. And Spezza, you're probably not giving him a raise or keeping him at $3.6 million, but who knows? Trying to think who else. Theodore, I don't think any defensemen are going to get a substantial raise where it like a $5 million plus, unless they get someone in free agency.
Right. Right, and actually, Marchessault.
Who knows? Eric
that's
Carlson.
Right. Yeah, Eric Carlson's a real possibility. Marchessault is actually going up to $5 million next year as well. So he's getting over a $4 million increase. So their cap space next year will look a lot different. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay. So we have.
So that'll be interesting.
That's right. Yeah. Next up, we had the next day the Islanders acquiring Brandon Davidson from the Oilers for a 2019 third round pick. This is the second time Brandon Davidson has been traded from the Oilers. They got him not long ago. Seems like not long ago, but at the same time, it was a while ago. He was traded from the Oilers to the Canadiens for David Desharnais. The Canadiens put him on waivers by the end of that year, 2017, and the Oilers claimed him. And then he was traded from the Oilers to the Islanders for a third-round pick. So they essentially got Brandon Davidson... they gave away Davidson for Desharnais in a third round pick, but from two different teams.
Yep. It's pretty interesting how a player's value can kind of just completely change between the start of the season and the deadline. I don't know when Davidson was put on waivers by Montreal, but the matter of fact is at the deadline, he's not on waivers and Islanders want him. So if they want him, they got to pay up, and they did. So Edmonton fans seem to like him. They hated trading him the first time, and I don't think they like trading him a second time. But it'd be hilarious if he comes back in the offseason for a third time, because I think he's a UFA. If not, he's got 1 year left. So I think that might have been the Islanders' only move, if I'm not mistaken. They made at least one other one. But as far as acquiring a rental, I think this is their only real move, which is interesting.
Yeah, you're right. So he's an RFA at the end of the season, so they will actually have his rights. But I mean, who knows? There is a real possibility he could go back to Edmonton again after all of this. And
so
granted,
funny.
I mean, he was a sixth-round pick, so it's not like there was necessarily huge expectations for him to blow up in the NHL. But for a sixth-round pick, I mean, the Oilers have gotten – he was actually part of the Ryan Whitney deal, so they've – So the actually four Davids, and they've gotten Desharnais in a third for someone who was a sixth round pick who they just developed. So not so bad.
Not bad, but yeah, the Oilers is one of those weird teams where they're back in the dumps again, and their defense needs some change. And when they make a change, it's like, oh, not that change. Don't trade him. Don't trade that guy. But they need to make a change somewhere. But it's funny when the Oilers, they need to get better defensemen. And Davidson seemed like a guy that was liked, and they traded him away. So obviously they weren't satisfied with him. Otherwise, they wouldn't have moved him.
That's right.
But it'll be interesting what their next step is to kind of change up their defense. I think Friedman it was Friedman. He was speculating what they do with Klefbom. He's been injured all year. But maybe even Adam Larson, that name is just coming up in speculation. They need to make a move similar to when they had Hall and Yakupov and Hopkins. They need to move one of those guys to get to address a need. And so do they do that with Larson and Klefbom in the offseason? I don't know, because you think if they moved up one of those guys, Davidson would be a guy they'd bring up because he's a younger guy and seemed to be doing well. But they move him out, so they got to replace him now. And who knows what else they got to do in the offseason. They got a lot of
and you know that whoever Adam Larson gets traded for will be considered being traded for Taylor Hall.
Oh, yes.
That will follow Adam Larson around everywhere. The trade tree will be Adam Larson for Taylor Hall. Whoever, if Larson ends up moving, people will always automatically assume that it was Taylor Hall for this next individual.
Yeah, I don't think they move Larson. I think Klefbom maybe, just to get more of a rounded package. Just to have one player, maybe get two players on the defense or something like that. I don't really know. I have no plan for Edmonton.
I'm not sure Peter Chiarelli does either.
No, neither.
That's right. Their defense right now is Darnell Nurse, Adam Larson, Klefbom, Matt Benning, Sekera, and Ovitu. So not a defensive core that actually screams even playoff contender, really, when you think about it. And maybe that's part of the reason they are where they are. But you're right. Something will need to change in Edmonton, definitely, to make this team move forward. The next day, the Bruins made another big splash, actually requiring Rick Nash from the Rangers. They gave up Ryan Spooner, defenseman Ryan Lindgren, who's a prospect of theirs, a first-round pick this year and a seventh-round pick this year, and also offloaded Matt Bolesky's contract to the Rangers. So Nash obviously was, at one time, was an incredible player for many different teams, Columbus and New York. He hasn't had the same success in his later years in New York, had a few really good years, but is playing right now on the second line in Boston. So playing next to David Krejci, which means he's going to have an amazing centerman next to him. What are your thoughts on Rick Nash going to Boston? Does this make Boston a contender?
I think Boston was a contender before they added Rick Nash. I don't know how Rick Nash will do, because I don't really know how he's been playing in New York, but I think the support group in Boston is much, much better than it was in New York. And there's also way less drama being in Rangers. You don't have that microscope over you in New York the same way, or in Boston the same way you would in New York. So the price is high. I'm surprised they gave up Spooner, but they unloaded half of Bolesky because they retained 50% of that salary.
That's right. That's right.
So if you look at it as maybe Spooner's compensation for Bolesky, then they gave up a first and a prospect and a seventh round pick, which I think that's fair. Given what the whole market was, I don't know if I would pay that much for Rick Nash. But Boston, you're kind of in this unexpected situation where everything seems to be going right. You can add a guy like this, improve group morale. He certainly doesn't hurt you. So I like it. I like it for Boston. New York Rangers, they at least got something for who is a UFA who might come back in the offseason, which is like
that's right.
Another one of those. So that's a huge win for the Rangers, if so. Although I don't know what the reason would be for Rick Nash to go back to the Rangers other than he just likes being in New York, which I believe would be the case.
That's right. I mean, I guess the hard part for Nash would be that he would be on a rebuilding team. That might be difficult, but maybe his love for the city and the team will outweigh that. He did mention that, you know, how is he going to tell his son that he can't cheer for the Rangers anymore? And I mean, that's understandable when you have kids that they would want to be cheering for their dad's team. And maybe his son is now a diehard Rangers fan. And so that might be difficult for him to know that his dad's now playing for Boston. That being said, Matt Bolesky had 0 points in 14 games for the Bruins this year, only put up 6 points in 21 games in the AHL. So maybe it's even just a win to get rid of the large chunk of Bolesky's contract for the next 3 years, because that actually opens up a lot of space for them moving forward. Who knows what they're going to do? I mean, Zdeno Chara's name is always up in the air. Who knows what's happening with him? He's ancient at 40 years old at this point. They don't have many other guys. They have a lot of small guys coming off the books. Nick Holden being one of those guys. Paul Postma, who they have, is going to be a UFA. A lot of small guys. But it's hard to know where they're aiming next year. They're not necessarily in a bad spot next year either. A friend asked me what I thought about this trade and how it was for the Bruins. I kind of just said, do they get out of the East without Rick Nash? It's hard to see them going by teams like Toronto and Tampa Bay without Rick Nash. Now, that doesn't mean that Rick Nash is going to solve all their problems, but he has a big body. He still skates well. He can still score. My guess is that he does actually make the team a little bit better. I mean, he's got 18 goals this year, so that'll be another 20-goal season for Rick Nash, basically, which means he's only had one season in the NHL where he didn't hit 20 goals, which was a few years ago, other than his rookie year where he had 17. So he's actually – his goal scoring is fairly consistent in the fact that it's typically above 20, which is good for a team, especially Boston, who will have a tough time in the East.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. He is – how old is he? He's 33 years old, so he's not quite done. But it's – I'm always weary of these big-name trade deadline acquisitions because they just never, ever live up to the hype. Usually you'll see the guy – if they get traded at deadline and they're not a rental, you'll see them have more success after that initial playoff run they have with their team because then they get more comfortable, yada, yada. So – I'm curious how he actually performs. Even if he, if nothing else, he's a veteran. He's a really skilled guy. He can teach a lot to like their huge group of young rookies. He's got a lot to say in a room like that. So the East is tough.
Yeah,
the East is really tough. It's hard to see anyone beating Tampa, but rarely does the best team in the league win the cup. So
that's right. That's right.
It's always surprise teams like Boston. That will come up, and they beat Tampa before in the playoffs to win a cup. So maybe they can do it again. We'll see. The other thing is with him coming back to New York, I kind of thought a lot about this with the Sedins of Vancouver, where there comes a point in your life where winning a cup isn't as much as a stable family life. Doesn't mean as much to you. I mean, like, I feel like when you're in your prime, that's when you can excuse going for a cup. But when you're starting to wind down, the prospect of being there for a rebuild, if you can have stability and staying with your family, with your kids, not having to move around every trade deadline as a journeyman. I think there's a lot of value in that. And New York would probably give him a no trade clause again. They'd probably pay him pretty good. So if he just says, this is my chance to cup, if I don't get this, I'm staying in New York for the rest of my career. I think that's understandable from a fan's perspective.
Oh, completely understandable. I mean, he's played in New York for 6 years. This was his sixth season with them. He came in at 28 years old. I mean, that's, you know, you're about that time where he's likely settling down. Maybe he's already got his wife and maybe a kid by that point. So you're right. It is a possibility that he viewed New York as the place that he was for the rest of his career. And so he may put down roots. And that's a side that we often forget in hockey. And Alan Walsh, who's a mega agent in the NHL, tweeted that earlier today on deadline day saying, often fans forget about the realness that happens with players where there's families and kids that you got to leave, hop on a plane with pretty much no notice, hop on a plane, go to another city. And you got to leave your family behind, which is tough. So definitely understandable for Rick Nash to make his way back to New York if he so chooses. That same day, yesterday, before the deadline, the Leafs picked up Thomas Plekanec and Kyle Bond from the Canadiens for Kirby Reichel, Runat Valiev, and a second-round pick this year. So the Leafs don't actually get any more contract space, which we all expected them to do. They didn't want to be at 50 contracts, and so when I shipped off Shashnikov a few days ago, they got to 49, but even with this trade, they're still at 49. So what does Thomas Plekanec bring to the Leafs?
I think it brings that veteran center that they're trying to look for. They had Dominic Moore as a fourth center for a while. And from what I've heard, he just hasn't really been Babcock's favorite. So this kind of is a guy that can move up and down. Matthews is out with an injury for a little bit. So if he's down longer, this helps him out. But man, if Matthews is healthy, their center of depth is Matthews, Kadri, Bozak, Plekanec. Like that's pretty good.
William Nylander's playing center right now as well.
Yeah, he can fill in when Matthews is injured. So, and then they have Dominic Moore just in case. And who they gave up, Kirby Reichel, Renat Valiev. Kirby Reichel was never going to make the team with the depth they have on wing.
No.
And Valiev was, I don't know much about him. I think Babcock liked him, but so did Montreal, so they wanted him. And then they got a second round pick. Montreal did for a guy who, again, wants to come back to Montreal in the offseason. So can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, Kirby Reichel hasn't played a game with the Leafs. He just played at the Marlies. Did not bad numbers. 52 points last year in 73 games, 30 and 55 this year. But you're right. There wasn't really much of a chance that he was going to make the team. Kyle Bond, a piece that went to Toronto. Again, more just a, maybe not a cap dump necessarily, but just a contract for contract trade. I don't know if the Leafs see a lot of future in Kyle Bond. 25 years old, 16 points this year with Laval in the AHL, 34 the year before with Rockford as a Chicago prospect. So not a lot of upside to Kyle Bond, who actually went undrafted. Even in university, when he played for Colgate in the ECAC, not a ton, not even a point per game player in college, which doesn't mean a lot, but I can't imagine that Kyle Bond was a key piece in this trade for the Leafs to make. But you're right, the center depth that the Toronto now shows with, yeah, Matthews, Kadri, Nylander when he needs to, Bozak, Plekanec, Moore, that's another one of those positions where if you have lots of extra defensemen in the playoffs, that's a good thing. If you have lots of extra centers, that's a great thing. I think I saw a stat the other day that said Plekanec had won the most faceoffs in the last 3 years combined or something that. So he's going to be a guy who plays penalty kill for them. He's going to win a lot of faceoffs for them. Great fourth line center. Going to be weird to see him in Maple Leafs blue, certainly after playing with for the Habs for so long. But that does add not only depth to center, but veteran leadership for a fairly young Leafs team. When you look at their forward group, everyone is actually quite young. I mean, other than Patrick Marleau, a lot of these guys are all under 30, right? I mean, I think Van Riemsdyk is approaching it. Bozak is getting there. But everyone's pretty young on the Leafs forward. And so to have Plekanec there as a guy who has been through the ringer, seen a lot of time in the NHL, and had his fair share of playoff experience, I think that'll be helpful for that team. Unfortunately, had to shave his goatee to go to Toronto because of Lou Lamoriello's rules. Yes,
because of rules.
That's right. But still has his navy blue turtleneck, which is very much important. That is the most important part. So yeah, Plekanec has 87 playoff games. It's actually a fair bit. It's a lot of games of playoff experience. 49 points, not so bad for a guy who'll be playing fourth line in Toronto.
Yeah, and the Brian Boyle trade, that they did pretty similar, the second round pick for Boyle, I think, along those lines anyway. Worked out really nice for him. They didn't get past the first round, I don't think, right?
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, they played Washington, right? But they loved him in that series.
Yeah.
So why not do that again with Plekanec? So 2 years in a row they traded a second round pick for a rental center who's Plekanec is almost definitely not coming back to Toronto, but who knows? I don't know if you've heard this yet, Spencer, but if Plekanec plays every game with the Leafs for the regular season, he gets to 999 regular season games.
That's right.
He goes back to Montreal. He plays his 1,000th there. So it's hard not to see that's the grand plan. But in the meantime, really good ad for the Leafs. That matchup, he can, like, Babcock wins like any matchup with this now.
That's true. Yeah.
That's how it feels.
It's hard to look at any team who wouldn't have Leo Komarov, Thomas Plekanec, and Josh Levo is currently on that line, but Connor Brown or anyone just being a shutdown line. That's a shutdown line that can take out a lot of teams. And realistically, you know, Toronto giving up a second, that's not so bad considering their whole forward group is so young. Matthews is 20, Nylander's 21, Marner's 20, Kasperi Kapanen's 21, Levo's 24, Connor Brown's 25, you know, Tyler Bozak's 31. As I mentioned, Van Riemsdyk 28. So actually, even their old guys aren't really that old. There's a lot of it's not like they're giving up the future when the future is already playing for them.
No, and like they can draft just fine without that second round pick.
That's right.
They know they can, or they can trade down like they did last year or 2 years ago.
And actually, they have San Jose's second round pick and third round pick this year. So it's not even like they're not going to be present in the second round at this point.
No, they'll be just fine. They'll gladly take that.
Yes, definitely. You did mention this quickly before. The Columbus Blue Jackets got Ian Cole as the Senators flipped him. They got the Senators got Nick Motry in a third round pick 2 years from now. Is that the best offer out there for Ian Cole, do you think?
Considering he's been on the block for the whole season, I would think so.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that no one offered more than that, but you're right. He's been on the block for seriously the entire season already.
Yeah, it seemed like in Pittsburgh that he was the odd man out, and then he got back in the lineup through one way or another, and then Hunwick was the guy they were shopping. He's got some term left. I don't know exactly his contract, but I think he's more expensive than Cole, as Cole is an expiring free agent. So Cole is the easier sell, but suddenly they wanted him, and then suddenly they had to get rid of him to make this Brassard deal work. So good deal for Blue Jackets. They got him probably as insurance for Jack Johnson. And if they didn't trade Jack Johnson, which they didn't, then they got a depth defenseman that they can use for the playoff push, because they're not – are they in a playoff spot right now?
If they are, they are barely. Yeah, they are barely in a playoff spot. They're technically the last wild card spot, but only 2 points up on the Islanders right now.
Yeah, so they couldn't really go get a big acquisition. This was a safe one.
Definitely.
It works for both teams.
Yeah, and so it was somebody on the TSN panel, I think it was Jeff O'Neill, who mentioned that Columbus has five defensemen they really trust, but they needed six, which has made a lot of sense. They have Zach Werenski and Seth Jones. They have Jack Johnson and Ryan Murray. They have David Savard and Taylor Chorney. So certainly,
they just claimed.
That's right. So certainly there is a need for a sixth defenseman. And Ian Cole is an incredibly serviceable sixth defenseman. You won two cups with Pittsburgh playing a very similar role. So now, granted, this is not the same team as the Pittsburgh Penguins, but that defense core looks pretty good for Columbus, actually.
Not bad, especially for a Tortorella team.
That's correct.
I think he fits like perfectly in that sixth defenseman there. And he can carry the load. Like he did that in Pittsburgh. One of their playoff runs, he was playing big minutes because of injuries, and it worked.
Yeah, it definitely worked. Yeah, there's lots to be said about having defensive depth, as we've mentioned multiple times already, and the Blue Jackets definitely have that now. The Nashville Predators gave up a lot for a player named Ryan Hartman. They got Hartman a fifth-round pick this year from Chicago for Victor Edgecell and a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick this year. So they gave up a prospect, a first, and a fourth for Ryan Hartman. Where does he slot into this Nashville team?
I would think third line. I believe he's a left winger, which is something they wanted to add on there. Specifically, was a left winger per Elliot Friedman. And it's high price, very high price, but he's 23 years old. It's RFA. He puts up 30 to 40 points over regular season. We were talking about this earlier, and we were pretty divided on our thoughts on it. You brought up that he had no points in his only playoff games, which was last year with Chicago, where they scored the infamous three goals and got swept.
That's right, yeah.
So he certainly didn't help them get out of that situation. But when guys like Kane and Taves only had 2 points themselves, it's hard to kind of base his playoff performance off that one alone. That first-round pick's probably going to be 28, 29, 30, 31. So you can... Not that it matters. It's still a first-round pick that any team would have taken in, say, like an Evander Kane rental. But I like it. I like it for Nashville. High price, but they get to keep him. He's probably going to – he brings more of that physicality, stereotypical stuff that you want for playoffs. But I think Nashville desired that, especially when you go deep. They probably saw last year how much they needed spare guys. And I think this factors into that for sure.
Yeah, so if he does slide in the third line, he can bump Scott Hartnell, and Scott Hartnell can be a 13th forward there for Nashville, can pull him in whenever they want to. Then we had the biggest trade at that time that kind of came out of left field, the Winnipeg Jets getting Paul Stastny from the St. Louis Blues for a first-round pick and rights to Eric Foley. First of all, my question is, what was St. Louis thinking here?
I have no idea. There was some follow-up tweets from a couple of insiders who were saying there must be a follow-up trade coming, and it never did. But he was making $7.5 million, I believe, and a free agent. And Winnipeg came and offered a first-round pick, a prospect, and a conditional pick. I have a hard time not taking that regardless. St. Louis has been on a decline lately, last month or so. The players, I know Braden Shen spoke out about it. If you were watching TSN, you would have seen his quote. He wasn't too happy about it. I can't imagine how the players felt. I've been listening to like a lot of Hockey Central Opening podcasts, and they talk about like what the morale of the room is when you make these big trades, when you go out and acquire a rental or when you sell off a player, and how much that actually impacts the room. And you can't help but think this destroys morale in St. Louis. They trade an important guy for a pretty good haul, but this is kind of like the GM doesn't really believe that this is the year anymore.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems as though maybe not throwing in the towel, but pretty dang close. Stastny is a UFA at the end of the year, as you mentioned, but he's, you know, in Winnipeg only making $3.5 million because the St. Louis Blues actually retained half of that. Now, my question is, currently the Winnipeg Jets could actually afford his full salary. They have another $4.8 million in cap space. So was there a hope for maybe another trade?
Well, for Winnipeg, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, they were in on everybody and just about got burned by everybody, it seemed like, because they were, who are the guys that they were in? They were in on Hoffman. Hoffman wouldn't waive, reportedly. He wouldn't waive for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
They were on Broussard, and Vegas came in and asked that. And who knows if they were in on someone like Hartman or Ian Cole, or because they were looking for a center. They were on Plekanec too. And Montreal opted to send them to Toronto for whatever reason. And so they struck out in a bunch of guys. And I feel like this was like, we'll do whatever we can to get somebody. And maybe that was like Rutherford saying, hey, if you take off half, that's the only way I'll make this deal, just to, because, you know, GMs do care about the business side of things as well. And maybe it's kind of holding the gun to Winnipeg's head. Who knows? But it's regardless a really good ad for Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah. Great ad. I mean, their forward depth now is pretty insane. I mean, you have Mark Scheifele on the first line at center. You have Brian Little, second line center. Paul Stastny, number three, playing with Ehlers and Patrick Laine. And then a great fourth line center, Matt Hendricks, playing on that fourth line. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, they have some guys who are injured as well. So Adam Lowry, who's pretty close coming back, can also play that fourth line center role.
Yeah, they were in on Letestu as well. So there's a number of guys that they struck out on.
Yeah, most definitely.
And also St. Louis, they did the same thing last year with Shattenkirk and still made the playoffs. So
that's
not
right.
Like a total shocker. They've been through this before, but yeah, it's pretty weird considering how hot they were coming out of the gate, and they've slowed down and all of a sudden just get rid of a big center. So
yeah,
I like it for Winnipeg.
Yeah, they're only 1 point behind Calgary for that final wild card spot, but they are 3-6-1 in their last 10 on a 4-game losing streak.
Yeah, that no doubt that played in.
It is not looking great in St. Louis. Vancouver Canucks made the first of their two deals, acquiring Brendan Leipzig from the Golden Knights for Philip Holm, who I mentioned will be an RFA at the end of the year. What are your thoughts on Leipzig and Vancouver?
I like Leipzig. He seemed to be another one of those guys similar to, who were you just talking about, Toronto? Reichel.
Reichel,
he's pushed down the lineup. He's better than Reichel. But one of those guys in Toronto that was just so far down. But when he played the Marlies, he was playing really well. So it was just a matter of not being picked to be called up. And then, of course, he was exposed in the Vegas draft, expansion draft. So Vegas took him. And I'm surprised they actually traded him for Holm, who's played one NHL game against Vegas a couple nights ago. So
must have liked what they saw, I guess.
I guess so. He made a really good hit in there, so maybe that sold the deal. Who knows?
Yeah.
But Holm, he signed in Vancouver. He turned down offers from a couple of teams, I think Toronto being one of them, to play in Vancouver because they offered a better opportunity to play sooner, which if you look at their defense, yeah, there's a lot of holes there. But he never played until a couple of days ago. And he played pretty well in the Utica Comets. So I think this is a good win for Vancouver because Holm was an expiring free agent. He probably wasn't going to resign, although he had been quoted as saying, I want to come back and work my way into the NHL. He seemed to imply that he wanted to come back to Vancouver, but obviously there was some concern if he was traded. And Leipzig has something like 15 points this year, something like that.
Yeah, 13, yeah.
Yeah, so another bit of a bottom nine tweener for Vancouver, which is like the whole team at this point. But I like him for a defenseman that never really played with us and probably was going to leave in free agency. So I like the deal.
Yeah, not bad at all. We're running a little bit long time here, so we're going to fire over a few here. Jason Chimera to the Ducks. Great older veteran winger for them.
I guess so, yeah. Anaheim has this weird, or Bob Murray, I should say, and along with Randy Carlyle, has this weird fascination with the old guys. If you remember when they had was it Jared Boll a couple of years ago, and they have obviously Bieksa, and they've got Francois Beauchemin, and these people that sign, and a couple of fans go, why would you sign him? He's old and slow and, you know, can't move his feet at all, but they bring grit and they bring leadership and they value that. So good ad for Anaheim, I guess. I don't really know how well he'll do. He wasn't doing well with the Islanders. And the Islanders, I don't really know why they wanted to move him, and I don't know what Chris Wagner brings, but
a little bit younger, I suppose, is the idea for the Islanders. While the Ducks, yeah, get a nice old vet to play in the playoffs. The Jets get some more defensive depth in Joe Morrow for the Canadiens for a fourth-round pick, and then the Canadiens pick up Mike Riley for a fifth-round pick from the Minnesota Wild. Again, just some defensive depth moves there for the Winnipeg Jets. Again, as we mentioned, can't really have too much defensive depth. Do you have thoughts on those, Matt?
Not really. Mike Riley is a little surprising because he was a touted college free agent, which they never work out, it seems, these days.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that they're able to move him. I didn't know he was even available.
Yeah, that was a very recent development, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess they replaced what Jerebek left and get Mike Riley. See how that works.
Yeah. Calgary Flames getting Nick Shore from the Senators for a seventh. Pittsburgh got Josh Juris from the Hurricanes for Greg McKegg. The Boston Bruins actually grabbed Tommy Wingles from Chicago for a conditional fifth. So we found out about that after the actual deadline. And something else just rolling in is that the Rangers got Chris Bigras from the Colorado Avalanche for Ryan Graves. And Bigras was actually, there was a little bit of hype behind him as well. So now he's in New York getting a little bit younger.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Move on to the big guns.
Yes, let's move on to the big ones. So a bunch of these happen. We'll say here that Patrick Maroon going to New Jersey again from the Oilers for a third round pick and Joey Dudek. Patrick Maroon just adding another big winger for the Devils, who are clearly loading up for a big playoff run.
Yeah, and another guy that Edmonton trades away, and Maroon wants to come back to Edmonton in the off season. So at least so he says. All these guys will say, I won't rule it out. But you kind of get the sense with a few of these guys that they mean it, they want to come back. And that's the price that they paid for Maroon when they got him from Anaheim, I think, was a third round pick. So
that's not so bad. Yeah, Maroon actually did say that he is interested in coming back to Edmonton July 1st. So the Columbus Blue Jackets getting Mr. Trade Deadline, Thomas Vanek from the Canucks for Tyler Motten, Jussi Jokinen. And I know there are many Canucks fans who are not exactly pleased about this one.
To me, this sounded like a move that if we don't move him, the fans are going to be angrier than if we do move him for what we're getting. Because fans were expecting a pick. And when we signed him, I was like, we're lucky if we get like a fourth. And then he played really well. And I was like, well, maybe he'll get a third, just like Detroit got for him last year. And then we get this. And I don't really know. Tyler Motts, okay, I guess. But we've got a billion of him. And Jokinen is whatever. We've got, I guess he replaces Vanek. But I don't know. To me, it seemed like if we knew this deal was available and we kept him, the fans would have been okay. But if they didn't know that this deal was the only thing offered and we kept them, they'd be angry. So what we do is we move them and we're still angry. If he didn't move, I would have been like, I guess they didn't offer a pick, but everyone seems to kind of think, why wouldn't you move him for X pick? But someone has to offer that. And for some reason, people weren't interested. And I guess there are reasons why, but it's hard to see the wingers that went for the prices they did and Vanek gets this. So we'll see how it happens. But in hindsight, if I knew this was the only package offered, I would have just kept him.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, even just to be someone who helps out the younger players, because Jussi Jokinen is definitely not an upgrade. Tyler Motte, we'll see how he ends up. But you're right. I mean, Vanek's not having a terrible year. He's got 41 points in 61 games. He's already matched last year's goal total for the whole season, and which is 17, 18 the year before. So he's already there. He's not doing terribly. And the biggest knock on him would be his defensive presence. Lots of people say, his O-zone starts are significantly higher than his D-zone starts. So he's being shielded a little bit. But hey, I mean, if you're a power play guy and that's what you do, you just score goals.
Yeah, that's how he used him. I don't think he's been as sheltered this year as he was in Detroit. And he also has a reputation of being Thomas, quote unquote, vanish. So where he just disappears as soon as you get him for a playoff run. So I get it. But yeah, pretty underwhelming for a Canucks fan.
Yeah, not so great. The San Jose Sharks got Evander Kane from the Sabres for a conditional first, which will be a second if Kane does not re-sign in San Jose, but a first if he does, in 2019, a 2020 fourth round pick and Dan O'Regan. So the Sharks actually won the Evander Kane sweepstakes.
And not a bad price. Not a bad price, especially because it's conditional. Isn't it more likely to be a second round pick? I forget the conditions.
So it is a second if Kane does not re-sign in San Jose, a first if he does. Now, granted, Doug Wilson just came out and said that he's hoping that Kane gets to like the city and the organization. So there is a hope that maybe he actually re-signs.
If he stays long-term, or at least even a couple of years, in a way that you could flip him if you wanted to later, that price is worth it, 100% first and fourth. And I think that fourth is, what is that based on? Is that playoff performance?
As far as I know, I'm not sure if the fourth is a conditional. Maybe that's still rolling in as official details, but.
Okay. Well, either way, if it's a first and a fourth for someone you get to keep for a couple more years, I think that's pretty good.
That's not so bad. Yeah. And he may even play on the second line with Logan Couture, in which case there's a lot of potential goals coming from that line. Of course, they got Eric Fehr on the fourth line as well. So that team is, again, loading up for a playoff run, but also they're still not out of it necessarily for John Tavares in the future either.
Yeah, that's another thing. The only thing that I guess I don't like about this is I'm not really a Evander Kane fan, but this is kind of like a weird time to add someone like Evander Kane. I know they're trying to replace like Patrick Marleau's contribution when he walked, but you look at the other teams around them, like you got Vegas, you got Nashville, Winnipeg, and then you got LA and Anaheim pushing. It's like, does this really push them ahead of any of those guys? I don't really know.
It's possible. It's very possible if Evander Kane can actually do what he has done in the past. He has 20 goals already. He had 28 last year, 20 the year before. So he was hurt this year a little bit, so he's played 61 games. But it is possible that it could push them forward, it's all dependent on how a 26-year-old winger with off-ice issues actually can exist in the playoffs.
Yeah, as long as he stays away from Vancouver. If this keeps him in Vancouver, it keeps him in San Jose, I'm all for it.
That's fair.
100%. I don't want him anywhere near Vancouver because the rumors always surface that Benning wants to get him. And no thanks.
Yeah, well, he's from Vancouver originally. Again, actually no playoff experience at all.
Nope.
So he has not played a playoff game yet. But San Jose actually has $7 million coming off the books in Joel Ward, Yannick Hansen, and Eric Fehr next year. So again, there's a possibility. Even if Kane gets a bit of a bump in salary, John Tavares is a real possibility there.
Yeah, and they were shopping Joel Ward too, which is an odd one. That they were trying to both shop Joel Ward and then get Evander Kane. You feel like if they're shopping Joel Ward, you want Joel Ward for the playoffs.
I don't know
how well he's been doing.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's kind of like a weird one where they end up not trading him and then getting Kane. And then, but yeah, you're right. If this is a, like, if they want to trade Joel Ward, I don't know if he's a free agent or not, but if he isn't, then that frees up some cap space to get someone like a John Tavares.
Yeah, he is coming off the books next year. Yeah, so that's not
okay, so bad. So that's better.
Two trades left, and they are big ones. The Vegas Golden Knights loading up again for these playoffs, showing they're in it, getting Thomas Tatar from the Red Wings for a 2018 first, a 2019 second, and a 2021 third. A high price to pay for Thomas Tatar, I would say. And yet, as a Red Wings fan, I'm actually quite happy about it.
Yeah, I would. Well, yeah, it came totally out of left field. I knew Tatar was out there, but I didn't think it'd be this price, or like the weird structure of a 2018 first, 2019 second, and a 2021 third. That's, you don't see those too often. So I was pretty surprised at both the return and that Vegas got him.
Yeah, it is significant. I mean, he actually becomes their highest paid player at $5.3 million, believe it or not, other than Marc-Andre Fleury, of course. But that actually leaves this rebuilding Detroit team with two firsts this year, two seconds this year, two thirds this year, two fourths this year. And then next year they have a first, two seconds and two thirds, and two fifths on top of every other draft pick they have. Now the real question is, why didn't Mike Green go anywhere?
Yeah, I don't get it. I saw Pierre LeBrun tweet that the injury, I guess he had a recent injury. I'm not too sure.
He did. He's been out for a few games. He hasn't played since February 15th.
Okay, so he said that scared teams off. But, I mean, to scare you off enough to not get him at all.
Yeah, I mean, and to think that it's impossible to even you got to think that somebody offered something, right? And if you're Ken Holland, what does it help you to hold on to him?
Well, he had a no trade clause.
He did, and so that's what I think is the issue here is that Mike Green. It came out that you know, a TSN producer who knows about his credibility, but he did mention that Mike Green actually blocked a trade to Toronto today.
I saw that.
Whether that's legitimate or not, he did have the power to do so. And so he had a couple of teams on his list. Tampa was one of them. And I believe possibly Boston was the other one of teams he would be willing to go to. But Tampa got McDonough, which we're about to talk about. So they actually had no interest in Mike Green.
Yeah. I'd be curious to why he turned down Toronto, because it obviously not because he didn't think they were a contender, because they are. But is it a Canada thing? Is it a market thing? Or is it like, I don't want to leave? It's like back to the Rick Nash thing, where I'm old now. I don't want to leave my family for no reason. If I do have to leave, it would be to a team that's got like the absolute highest chance to win the cup.
Right.
So I kind of wonder if that was why he blocked a trade to Toronto and would allow one to Tampa. But yeah, they go and get McDonough and, you know, see you later, Green, we don't need you.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting for Detroit too is now with Peter Mrazek's retained salary being done next year, Mike Green being gone and Tatar now being gone, they actually free up $13 million in cap space for next year, which likely will all get used to re-sign the likes of Athanasiu, Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, likely Martin Furk, and likely Tyler Bertuzzi as well. I kind of expected more out of the Red Wings. I thought that Green would definitely go. I was hoping Tatar would. There was talk about Nyquist moving as well, but if you move both Tatar and Nyquist, it's hard to look at what kind of potential you have up front for scoring at that point. So that's not bad. There was also bites on Xavier Ouellet, Nick Jensen of the Red Wings as well. Even talk about maybe Danny DeKeyser, although Craig Custanen said there wasn't any movement, really any discussions happening there. So not a terrible trade deadline for the Red Wings, who kind of were sellers for the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah, if you can get a first round pick at the trade deadline for the upcoming draft, that's about as good as you can get.
That's right. Yeah.
I think I would take that if nothing else, but yeah, I thought Nyquist would go too. But you can move them in the offseason. Yeah. I think they probably
will. So that leaves Detroit with 8 picks in the first 4 rounds next year, which is going to be very good to restocking.
Pretty good for
for
a team that like never had first round picks.
That's right. Years ago. Detroit traded away many of their first round picks in the past, so now they are going to be holding on to as many as they can in the early rounds. And then the big one. Ryan McDonagh moved to Tampa along with actually JT Miller. Which was a surprise. So the Lightning gave up Namestnikov, a 2018 first-round pick, a conditional second next year, and Lieber Hajek and Brett Howden, who are both doing really well in the WHL and both who played in the World Juniors this past year. Is this a great return while also being a great trade for Tampa?
Yes, absolutely. It's Namestnikov. Friedman's been saying for a while they were trying to move him because he's an RFA and he's arbitration eligible, and he's having that great season with Stamkos and Kucherov that was inflating his what he would use in arbitration like crazy. So I can't imagine they wanted to go through that, especially going through that with – did they go through it with Drouin? Was he arbitration?
No, he just held out for a trade, I believe, yeah.
Okay, so he didn't have arbitration. Never mind then. But anyways, that was someone they were okay with moving, and then they replaced him with JT Miller.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, they've got like a boatload of prospects. Giving up Brett Howden and Hajek, that's fine. And that first round pick, that's fine. And then the conditional second, I believe, is a next year's first if they win the cup that year.
That's right. Yeah, this year or next year.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You win the cup, definitely okay. And that's way cheaper than what we thought Tampa would have to pay up for Erik Karlsson.
That's right.
So
yeah. And
I think that's an instant win for Tampa.
And Tampa got to hold into Sergachev, which was the big thing. They wanted to hold into Sergachev and Braden Point, which they did. This allows JT Miller to slot in either second line with Braden Point and Kucherov or third line. The thing that does worry me a little bit is Tampa's forward depth. The third and fourth line is Adam Ernie, Yanni Gourde, Corey Conacher, Cedric Paquette, Chris Kunitz. So it's not amazing, but it's not the worst ever. It's somewhere in the middle for a bottom six. So JT Miller, if he slots in the bottom six, awesome. If he bumps Alex Killorin down to the bottom six, that's great. their forward depth actually looks pretty good. And especially with Sergachev being as young as he is, it's hard to imagine Lieber Hajek even having a shot at the Lightning for the next 3, maybe even 4 years. So maybe they actually didn't give up that much because they got to hold on to who they did. Brett Howden, I mean, he's a great player. Just saw him play on Sunday. Looked head and shoulders above the other players that he was playing with. Definitely has pro skating ability already. But again, Tampa has a full cupboard of prospects, and so maybe this was something they're willing to give up for McDonough, who they have this year and next year, and JT Miller, who I believe is a UFA next year or in 2 years as well. So possibly even two guys with term, which isn't still bad, and two really good players. Now, Matt, you mentioned there to me earlier, their defense looks really good. I mean, that's Victor Hedman, Anton Strahlman, Sergachev, Girardi, Coburn, Schuster, McDonough. That's pretty great for a team who's looking for a cup this year.
Yeah, three of them former Rangers, Strahlman, McDonough, and that's Girardi, right, who I believe they were all there with Rangers when they went to the finals.
And Callahan up front as well.
Yeah, Callahan there as well. So it's pretty funny how many trades have happened between them. You see these significant names going back and forth, like Marty St. Louis and Callahan a couple of years ago. So yeah, it's hard not to pick Tampa as the cup favorite.
That was my next question. Now that we've looked at the trades, who do you have for the Stanley Cup?
The East is just ridiculous. Like, you always have to consider Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Especially now with what they've added. I believe Matt Murray just went down with an injury, though, today.
In practice, that's right.
So, yeah. So Pittsburgh, their goalies might be the death of them if Murray can't be healthy. Because he's always kind of had health issues in terms of staying or in terms of not being injured. And he had a bit of a dip during the season, if I'm not mistaken. He wasn't playing well. Yeah, maybe that was just him being injured. I don't really remember. But yeah, I want to pick Pittsburgh just because it's like they're set up to the three-peats so well. But Tampa is just so complete top to bottom that they got Vasilevskiy is doing fantastic. Their backup is either Budaj or Domingue.
Budaj's hurt at the moment, but yeah.
Okay, so one of those two guys, they're good enough to step in if they need them to, and their defense is just stacked. And then their forward depth, you mentioned the fourth line is not amazing, but it's good enough. And you've got, like, in terms of scoring depth, Stamkos, Kucherov, JT Miller, Braden Point, Yanni Gourde's picked it up. You had Mestikov, but Miller replaces that just fine. They kind of got the Pittsburgh thing going where you can put Stamkos, Kucherov on the top line and just put someone, like even Corey Conacher, they've probably done that already. And he might be able to just get that perfect fit. And then you can use a depth guy on your top line and then move a more skilled guy lower down the line. So it's they got Tyler Johnson as well. So yeah, I have to pick them.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And they do have 4-time Stanley Cup winner Chris Kunitz playing on their fourth line right now.
Yes. They've got everything that any team dreams of having going into the playoffs. They've got veteran leadership. They've got defensive depth. They've got scores. They've got steady goaltending. Like everyone's been predicting a Nashville-Tampa finals, and it's hard to not see that coming true. But we've been fooled before.
That's right.
We thought they were going to the finals last year.
That's right. Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Nope.
If I had to pick one, hard to say, hard to count out Pittsburgh. Looking at Tampa, they look fantastic. Winnipeg and Nashville both look really good, especially with Winnipeg's center depth now. But yeah, I guess if I had to pick one, which I'm going to make myself do, I would also say Tampa Bay. They have a plus 56 goal differential this year, which is highest in the league, which is hard to imagine that's going to go down when you add Ryan McDonough and JT Miller. And the only person you lose off your roster is Namestnikov. So I'm going to say, Stevie Y gets to lift another Stanley Cup at this time as a GM and rub it in all of the Red Wings' faces for letting him walk out of their front office.
Yeah, the only thing I hate about saying Tampa Bay will win the Cup or picking them as my Cup favorite is that it's never the best team going in. It never is.
That's right.
But maybe this year it finally is.
Yeah, it very well could be. That is it for the first episode of the Icebreaker Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We will be back every week. We're going to try and do one of these every week and continue chatting. Make sure you download Icebreaker from the App Store, and it's available on iOS and Android, if I'm not mistaken, Matt.
Correct.
It is. So it will be a little bit slow on the Icebreaker app until the draft, but there's always it's great to know what's happening when you're the first one to know what's happening. As soon as the insiders tweet it out, it's on the app. It's out there. So that is the Icebreaker podcast signing off. We will see you in a week's time.